Morning.
Morning, I'm so sorry. Oh.
Rabbi Moshe Akiva Brandeis.
Not too long from now, we'll be sitting at the Seder, experiencing the Shibud Mitzrayim and how we were redeemed from Mitzrayim. And there are three questions I'd like to pose. Number one, why is it that we have to experience the Shibud Mitzrayim? Why do we have to even celebrate Yetzias Mitzrayim and our redemption? Wasn't it the Ribbono Shel Olam himself who put us in Mitzrayim in the first place? The Ribbono Shel Olam was the one who put us there in the first place. So we're thanking the Ribbono Shel Olam who put us into Mitzrayim, and then he redeems us from Mitzrayim. The Dubna Magid asks this question. Reb Chaim Berlin asks this question. Secondly, we know that we're going to be sitting with Haseva leaning on the left side. Many of our customs on Seder night are to experience the freedom, to experience feeling like a free man. And we're still in Golos. We're still in Golos. We're still experiencing the exile. It may not be the Egyptian exile. It may not be Mitzrayim anymore. So it's Edom. In those days it was Yovan. Back in other times, in different exiles, we always relive, reenact the redemption from Mitzrayim. But we're still in Golos. The Shlach HaKadosh asks this question. And thirdly, there's a chiyuv we all know, and it's actually stated by the Baal HaGadah himself, which is chayev adam lirois esatzmei. A person has to literally experience, and it's learnt from Psukim, to experience as if he himself left Mitzrayim, as if he himself was under the shibud of Mitzrayim, and he's now set free. It's a very difficult chiyuv. We are not slaves. We're not in Mitzrayim. It's history. These are historical facts. How do we literally, and it's a chiyuv. Learn from Psukim. You know, on Purim we have Chai Venish Lebesume. That's a practical halacha. If you haven't yet reached the point of intoxication, that you don't know the difference between Haman and Mordechai, so you down another bottle. And if you still know the difference, you have another bottle. It's a practical halacha. I can understand how you can mechayev a person to be adaleyoda bin araham lebarach Mordechai. But here, how can it be an obligation to feel as if I was in Mitzrayim and I was set free? So I want to go on a little bit of a roundabout route. And eventually I hope to come face to face, we'll come face to face with the answers. The Brichas Avram, this is not the Brichas Avram we have on Shas, this is the Brichas Avram who is zoicha to a haskoma from the Beis Yosef, from the Mechaba. He says he had a dream. And he writes in his Akdoma that a man, he didn't know who it was, but with a flowing white beard, Sa'oris Haruchos, a long white flowing beard, appears to him and asks him the following question in a dream. And he tells him, who was the greatest Navi? Who was the biggest prophet of all time? So he says, Moshe Rabbeinu. He answers correctly in his dream. Moshe Rabbeinu. Says this man, if so, why, as opposed to all other Nevi'im, as opposed to all the other prophets, why did Moshe Rabbeinu wait till after Kriyas Yam Suf to sing Oz Yosher? All the other Nevi'im prophesied. They told you what would be, what would become, what was going to be ahead of time. And then it transpired. Moshe Rabbeinu waits his entire Yetzias Mitzrayim. Then comes Kriyas Yam Suf, and they're standing on the other side of the Yam Suf, and now they sing the Oz Yosher. He didn't tell them before what would be. So he answers in his dream. He tells this man, Because I'll tell you why, I'll give you the difference between Az Yosha and all the other Nevi'im, all the other Nevi'os. He says like this, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted Az Yosha to be a song that Klal Yisrael would sing with him. And up until that point, Klal Yisrael were not ready to sing the praises of the Ribbono Shel Olam in the full extent. And therefore it had to wait till afterwards to sing the Oz Yosha. Klal Yisrael weren't ready to put their full energy and their full passion into singing Oz Yosha. It took Kriyas Yamsuf to experience the Yetziah, to experience the Exodus, to experience exiting Mitzrayim, experience watching their enemies drown and they themselves being on dry land on the other side in order to sing Oz Yosha properly. It took the bondage and then the redemption for them to be able to fully sing Oz Yosha with Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's why he waited till afterwards. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, in his famous conversations with the king of Khuzar, which are transcribed in the Khuzari, the king of Khuzar, early on in their conversations, asks him the following question. He says to him, "What do you believe in? What's your belief? What's your faith?" So he tells him, "I believe in Hashem, who took us out of Mitzrayim," paraphrasing, "Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hutzeisicha," the first of the Aseret HaDibros. And the king says to him, he challenges him, he says, "Why do you refer to Mitzrayim and not to the beginning of time, creation itself? The Ribbono Shel Olam created heaven and earth. Why are you jumping to Mitzrayim?" And the truth of this question is also relevant to Anochi Hashem. Hashem says, "I am Hashem who took you out of Mitzrayim. Why not? I created heaven and earth." And Rabbi Yehuda Halevi answers the king, and he tells him, "It's because it took Yetzias Mitzrayim for the faith to become knowledge. For the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world and continues to create and continues to keep his eye on the world in all its detail, it took Yetzias Mitzrayim for us to realize that this is a fact. This is something undisputed, something you cannot argue with. And that's why I chose that example rather than Shamayim Va'aretz." Yetzias Mitzrayim was a time where hundreds of thousands of people witnessed with their very own eyes that the Ribbono Shel Olam created, continues to create, and keeps an eye on every detail in his world. Still, we have to understand the shibud that brought about the redemption eventually. We get to the Makkos. Eventually we reach the Kriyas Yamsuf, the Oz Yosha. But there's also the painful times of the Shibud, which we reenact on Seder night. The Maral writes, we all have heard the word Yisurim Shel Ahava, afflictions of love. Usually it's understood that a person who's able to be afflicted, to able to go through painful times and still feel love for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Maral says something very insightful. The Maral says, Yisurim Shel Ahava is afflictions which bring a person to love, rather than during the time. We don't ask for it, but lemaisa, a person who does go through painful, challenging times, can grow through those times and get closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam through those times. So it's Yisurim which bring to Ahava. An insight from the Maharal. Shibud Mitzrayim was necessary. Shibud Mitzrayim was necessary to bring Klal Yisrael to the Ahava which would eventually come. The Biskrov says, you know, we find Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron walking into the palace of Paro to challenge him with regards to enslaving Klal Yisrael in his land. He says it's a fascinating, if you think about it, it's a fascinating scene. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron walking down into this despotic, absolute dictator who has complete control over his nation, over his land. They're walking in to tell him to please free this huge nation which are enslaved and working hard for them. Please free them. It's flabbergasting. You know, you've got two men walking in, please free a nation. He says there's something much deeper than that. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron weren't walking in, please free a nation. He said this was a battle of the minds. This was hashkofa discussions. If you look carefully at the psukim, says the Briskarov, they were hardly focusing on letting the nation go, letting the nation leave. If you look carefully, Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron walk in, and they talk about the existence of a God, the existence of a one Ribbono Shel who runs the world. That's what their focus was. And if you look at the psukim, Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron to tell Paro, "V'amartem elav Hashem Elokei ha'ivrim hikra eleinu." This is how you should start the discussion. Hashem, the God of the people you've enslaved, has appeared to us. What does he answer Paro? Firstly and foremostly, "Mi Hashem Hashesh." Very good. "Mi Hashem Hashesh ma'bekoiloi." Who is this Ribbono Shel Olam that I should be considering his words? I don't know of him. And then, only in addition, "V'gamis Yisrael Olei Ashaleach," I won't send these people that you'd like me to free. But first and foremost, I don't know who you're talking about. This is a hashkofa discussion. This is a battle of the minds. This is an argument of whether a Ribbono Shel Olam exists in the world. And then they say back, "Koyam Hashem Bezois Teida." What are the Makkahs for? Not to send out Klal Yisrael. That will be a bonus. That's what you're supposed to do. We're requesting that of you. But the main point is, you will know through the Makkahs that will come your way that the Ribbono Shel Olam exists. We'll prove it to you. You'll watch it happen. And so you'd see us Mitzrayim brought us as a nation to the facts of the Ribbono Shel Olam's existence and to the facts of how he continuously runs the world. You know, Seder night is a time for telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the story is not just the story of our nation, of our people. It's not just something which we want to relive and not just remember. But it's something which is everlasting and stays with all people who sit at a Seder. Children, guests, who remember the Seder for all time. Historically, there was an interesting personality who saved Klal Yisrael from its enemies, from Midian and Amalek. His name was Gideon. The parasha in Nach, in Shoftim, and they were in terrible. It was in terrible times that a malach appears to Gideon, and he tells him, "Hashem imcha gibor hachayil." Hashem is with you, warrior. Gideon, although this malach has appeared to him from the Ribbono Shel Olam, doesn't seem so impressed. And he answers him, he says, "Can I ask you a question? Loma mitzasanu kol zeis." There were 7 years under Midian. Why is all this happening to us? "V'aye kol nifla oisav asher sipru lona aviseinu." Where are the wondrous things that we've heard from our fathers that transpire through the generations? Where are all those things? He challenges the malach. They told us, "Mimitzrayim he'alonu Hashem." They told us that Hashem saved us from Mitzrayim. We're not seeing this today. No less than Rashi, in Shoftim, Vav, Posuk, Yud Gimel, Pesach Hoya, Rashi says. This happened on Pesach. And he was referring to Seder night. He says, "Daddy said at the Seder, Emes Shikrani Abba, my father was reading the Haggadah at the Seder. And he told us, he said, hello. And he said, B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim." This is Rashi. Father read B'tzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim. He told us how the Ribbono Hashem redeems Klal Yisrael when they have difficult times. Where are these redemptions? I want to see them. We've been 7 years under Midian. We don't see Hashem. If they were tzaddikim, our forefathers, so in their zchus we should be redeemed. If they were Rishoyim, so we're no less than them. That's how Rashi finishes. Where are all these wondrous things we've heard about? Let's just think about it for a moment. This is Seder night, many years down the line. This is already Shoftim. But Gideon remembers, it's alive by him. It's not just something his father said at the Seder. It's not just the Haggadah Shal Pesach, which he knows the translation of. He lived it to the point that if a Malach appears to him from Hashem, the first thing he's going to say is, what is going on? Daddy told me last night that Hashem saved us when we have difficult times. Where is Hashem? I want to see Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now we're under Midian. This is a terrible Golos. I want to be saved. I want to see this redemption. I'm waiting for this. And a few years after Gideon, we meet a man called Gregory. There's a Yid, Ramotel Rosenberger. Kimat. Ramotel Rosenberger. It doesn't have a star by his name in the book, so it hasn't been changed. So I'm using his name. Who had a business meeting in, well, which place was it? Somewhere in Texas. El Paso. My first time hearing of this place. El Paso in Texas. She has a business meeting there. Assuming there's no Yidden in the town, I'm not going to Halacha Shaboy, but he goes into a non-kosher environment, a restaurant, and tells his business associate that he will only drink Coke in a plastic cup, but you're welcome to eat whatever you like in this establishment. So the meeting's underway, and as he finishes, a man comes over to him and says, Shalom Aleichem Ayid. The man doesn't look very religious. He's shocked. Texas. And he says, Aleichem Shalom. And he tries to explain himself. I'm only in this restaurant. He says, don't worry. I noticed you're Jewish because you only drank Coke. And you wouldn't partake in any of the food that your business partner was offering. He says, could you come over to my table? You finished your business? He said, yeah, I'm finished. He says, could you come to our table? I want to schmooze. I haven't seen any Yid in a while. So he sits down, and this remotel asks him, where are you from? You speak a Geschmacke Yiddish. Shalom Aleichem Ayid. It sounds like you weren't born in Texas. He says, no, I was born in Borough Park, but that's history. 25 years I've been living in Texas. He says, what do you keep? Rosh Hashanah. He says, no. Shana has no meaning on my calendar. Yom Kippur? No. When I first came here, I had a job which I couldn't take off a day just like that. Rishon Yom Kippur, it's all the same. He stopped. So Ramotel stands up to leave the room. He says, we just started a conversation. He says, I don't have a problem sitting with secular people. I have no problem sitting with people who have left religion. I don't like talking to people who lie. He's taken aback. He says, what are you saying? He says, if you come from a completely frum home, as you say in Borough Park, with loving parents and a supportive home, and you say you keep absolutely nothing, I don't believe you. So I want to end the conversation. He says, you didn't ask me so many questions. You didn't ask me about Pesach. He says, oh, how about Pesach? He says, Pesach, you would eat in my house. I'll give you the phone of my brother in Borough Park, who's still frum. You can check. You would eat in my house on Pesach. We clean the house. It's chametz free. Shmurah matzahs I've sent over. My brother makes sure I get shmurah matzahs over from Borough Park. All the food is kosher. We totally kasher the house. It's a beautiful Pesach. He says, can you explain yourself? He says, I'll tell you the truth. When in my first year, I kept absolutely nothing. Came round Pesach time. On the first night of Pesach, I was eating a sandwich and I couldn't eat it. I just couldn't eat it. I was remembering Seder night. I was remembering the weeks before Pesach, my mother, I would wake up in the middle of the night and see my mother scrubbing and cleaning and tidying. And I'd say, Mommy, what's all this about? And she'd explain to me. Yetzias Mitzrayim and the chometz and the matzah. And they came running out to Mitzrayim. They had no time for the doughs to rise. And Hashem delivered us and there was a redemption. I just couldn't continue swallowing that sandwich. Since that day, I made a decision. Pesach is special. We keep Pesach. And once we keep Pesach, we do it the full deal. The whole week, no chometz. Seder night is alive today. It's not only not just reading history. It's not just our people's story. But it's our story. It's our story of redemption. And we are continuously writing this story. The stipler says in Chai Olam, when we share the Yetzias Mitzrayim with our children, he says how we should talk about Dam, Tzfardeya and Kinem as being the way that the Ribbono Shel Olam showed Mitzrayim and Klal Yisrael how he runs every detail in this world. Dam, he says, is the waters. Hashem controls all bodies of water. Tzfardeya are the living creatures in the waters. Kinim is earth. Dever are the animals. Orev and Dever are the animals that walk on the ground. Dever is the life of those animals. And then with Shechin, it's all ailments. All illnesses. The Ribbono Shel Olam is in complete control. Here the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving them literally life lessons. I control this world. Mitzrayim, you can be stubborn. Paro, you can be totally stubborn. You'll learn. Makkah by Makkah. How I control every part of this world. Borod brought everything together, he says. Borod is hailstones which had fire and ice. This showed that the Ribbono Shel Olam not only controls each part of nature, animals, or with Arabah, the flying creatures, illnesses of people, earth, water, and the creatures that live in the water, Borod showed the Ribbono Shel Olam controls and can mix things together. Naturally, fire and ice don't really get along with each other. I'll put them together. We'll have fire and ice balls coming flying down from Shemaim. Nature is in the Ribbono Shel Olam's hands. And finally, with Choshech, it's the luminaries outside of this world. The Ribbono Shel Olam controls the sun, the moon, the stars, the galaxies that are not part of our world, but outside the universe. The luminaries, the Ribbono Shel Olam controls and switches them on and off. And all through the Makkos, there was another lesson. The Ribbono Shel Olam shows his control over every part of the world and beyond it. But it's for individuals. A Yid can walk around while it's total darkness from Mitzrayim and he has light. He sees. The Mitzri's not gone blind. There's darkness, he cannot see. And the man from Goshen walks out and has light. And the same with all the others, that wild animals have been let loose, totally unbound. No constraints. They've come in from North Pole with their environment. Ice around them. Walking through Egyptian streets. And the little youth from Goshen is stroking the mane of the lion while he tears up Egyptian families. There's not only control over the world, it's control for each individual. Everyone has his way through the world and his total. Hashem has his eyes on every individual. That was a lesson for them to see. Both for Mitzrayim and for Klal Yisrael. This is not just about punishments for Mitzrayim. These were lessons. Reb Tzadik HaKohen writes on the Psukim at the end of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, where the Ribbono Shel Olam says, all the machlois which I have sent to Mitzrayim, le'osam olach, I will not put onto Klal Yisrael. I will not allow Klal Yisrael to suffer. Says Reb Tzadik HaKohen, Klal Yisrael haven't suffered? Shechin? No illnesses in Klal Yisrael? Has there never been affliction through the generations in our golos, individuals, and as a nation? Says Reb Tzadik, that's not the way to understand it. Reb Tzadik says like this. He says, it's a different type of affliction. It's a different type of suffering. He says, Mitzrayim deserved their suffering for what they did. For Klal Yisrael, as a nation or as individuals, all suffering is with a purpose to bring them closer to Hashem. As much as we don't ask for it, as much as we ask not to receive it, they're there to bring us to a higher level, closer to loving the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Beis HaLevi says, in the Haggadah we read, Hashem says, I took you out of Mitzrayim. Bekesi kol b'chayr. Ani v'loi sorof, it was me, not an angel. Loi malach, loi shliach, only the Ribbono Shel Olam himself took you out of Mitzrayim. So the Beis HaLevi in Parashas Bo, wants to understand, why did it necessitate the Ribbono Shel Olam b'chvoidoi v'atzmoi, himself redeeming Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim? Why? Says the Beis HaLevi. And he's makdim him, he gives an introduction to his answer. He says, all that transpires in our world, in this world that we live in, is connected to the higher world. What happens here is really a manifestation of what's going on in the heavenly spheres. And so, fire that burns, naturally, we see fire burns, if you put a paper into fire, it will burn. It's only because fire has power from its koiches in the upper worlds to burn. We're seeing a manifestation of that physically when the fire burns the paper. And when we see a nes in this world, something going keneged teva, he says, really, it's only to our own physical eyes. Because, for example, when Avraham Avinu was in the fire at Or Kasdim, the fact that fire did not burn Avraham Avinu was not a real ness in Shomayim. Because Avraham Avinu was on the level that fire couldn't burn him. Nature didn't have shlita, didn't have control over a man on the level of Avraham Avinu. And therefore, the fact that fire can't burn him is derech ha-teva up there. Here, it looks fascinating. Fire's not burning this man. It's a nes. To us, it's a miracle. But really, in Shomayim, in heaven, it makes sense. Avraham is on a higher level than the natural power of fire. Fire is cold for Avraham Avinu. He says, Mitzrayim was different. Mitzrayim, the Yidden had gone to such a low level of Tumas Mitzrayim, they were totally assimilated into the culture of Egypt. To the point that even for a miracle to happen in this world, they were undeserving. Totally undeserving. No malach could understand it. No angel was willing or was able to redeem Klal Yisrael because they didn't deserve it. It would have been a miracle in the upper worlds as well. And only the Ribbono Shel Olam could take them out of Mitzrayim. It had to be not a malach, not a sorof, not a shlich. It had to be the Ribbono Shel Olam ichvoidoi v'atzmoi taking them out of Mitzrayim. The Nesivah Shalom brings in Chelek Beis, he says, from a Medrash in Tehillim, the Medrash tells us that Mitzrayim had Klal Yisrael like a unborn calf, like an animal when it's still in the womb of its mother. He says the comparison of Klal Yisrael being in Mitzrayim like an unborn calf in its mother cow is an amazing comparison. If you think about it, the calf is totally dependent on its mother. It breathes, it eats, everything it does is because of its mother. It has total dependency. That was Klal Yisrael's situation in Mitzrayim. They were totally dependent, they were absolutely assimilated. There was nothing left of the Yid. He was, to the point, says the Nesivah Shalom, he couldn't think like a Yid anymore. None of his thought processes were Jewish. It was totally an Egyptian cultured man. If you met a Yid in Mitzrayim, the average Yid in Mitzrayim, you would see an Egyptian. So you might argue with me and say, we have the three Zechusim that they had, they didn't change their name, they didn't change their clothes, and they didn't change their language. And I'll tell you like this, it was, if you think about it, they are all externals. Language, names, and clothes. That's not hashkofa. That's not a belief system. That's not what you believe in. That's not what you're doing. It's external. I go by a Jewish name. I speak a Jewish language. One can speak any language. A secular person can talk Yiddish and Hebrew. It's not a problem. You can be totally assimilated into the Egyptian culture and wear Jewish clothes. Have a Jewish name. And speak a Jewish language. And I have support for this because the Maharal writes that what Mitzrayim did for Klal Yisrael was it took a nation which was totally assimilated and gave them a pnimius, his words, gave them a pnimius, an internal value system which was then never to be eradicated. So Mitzrayim, the exodus from Mitzrayim, gave Klal Yisrael something which was never taken away. At the time, they had nothing. There was nothing left. But then, with the colossal Nisim that they saw, the miracles that they saw in epic proportions, waters turning into blood, frogs coming in, animals coming from all over the world, tremendous Nisim, and then Yetzias Mitzrayim with Kriyas Yamsuf, we go through Dayenu, going through all of them one by one as we mention them. This gave them something, a pnimius, which then lasted through all the Goluyos. There's a man who turned up in a camp in Eretz Yisrael asking for a job. He said they heard they need cleaning or administration, maintenance, a Russian man. What do you need? He says, Victor. And he says, how'd you get to us? He says, because Dmitry is my friend and he already works for you. He asked, so he interviews him, he asks him, what were you doing in Russia? What brought you here? This is still during, before the Iron Curtain was melted. And he says, I'll tell you the truth, I was a professional footballer. He says, really? And here you come to clean in our camp? He says, yeah, Dmitry was my coach. And I was a professional footballer. Okay? And as he's sitting with him, he's very curious. First of all, it's hard to believe. But a few days later, he brings newspaper clippings of him holding trophies, standing in arenas with tens of thousands of people cheering him on. It looked pretty real to him. So he asks him, he says, there must be a story behind this man. And he says to him, what made you leave? Why would you leave such a prestigious position in Russia? You're literally a celebrity to come to Israel. So he says to him, I went by the name Victor. However, they knew my middle name, which was Israel or Yisrael. And although they knew I was Jewish, they were willing to look away. But they had one thing they kept insisting on. I have to drop my middle name. And I said, I'm not dropping it. And they insisted, and he went back and forth. He said, we can't have an obviously Jewish member of the team. We appreciate your being part of the team, but we can't continue like this. Back and forth. Eventually they asked me to leave, and I left the country. I got permission to leave, and here I am, looking for work. And you know, there's got to be something more to this. A man in communist Russia, not willing to give up on his middle name, he says, tell me, when he gets closer to him, as the relationship develops, he says to me, tell me, why did you insist on keeping your name? What did you have from it? So I'll be honest with you. I always heard about my second cousin here in Israel. His name is Yaakov Yisrael Kanevsky. And my name is Yaakov Yisrael Kanevsky. I just couldn't drop my middle name. So of course, the externals with the zchusim that Klal Yisrael had to save them from Mitzrayim. But it was the pnimius that it took the pnimis that had to be built, their connection to something real. In his case, it was his second cousin. But connection to something real, a pnimius, to be everlasting. Externals are the zchus, the merit, to begin a redemption. But they have to go through a real process, which will change their thoughts, will change their attitudes, will give them a new lease on life. And as we go through the Haggadah, we meet the four bonim. The four children were at the Seder. The Baal HaGadah tells us the Torah itself is referring to them. And one of them is actually surprisingly at the Seder. The Rosha. What's he doing at the Seder table? If this is our regular Rosha, earrings and spiked hair, what's he doing sitting at the Seder table? Why did he turn up? Perhaps the Rosh is not quite the person we think he is. The Beis Halevi again, Parshas Bo. He says the Rosh, he begins by saying perhaps it's what we all think. He says no. The Rosh is a very intelligent man who knows Hashkofa. He knows our history. He has full knowledge of where Klal Yisrael come from, Mitzrayim, Yetzias Mitzrayim, Briyas HaOlam. He can answer all your questions. But he's an apokyrus. He doesn't believe it's relevant to life. It's our history, our culture, like many nations have cultures, but it's not, has no current relevance. As Zizok de Beis Halevi. And therefore he sits at the Seder. He's happy to go through Jewish culture. It's a nice night of re-experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim. But with no relevance. And therefore he says, you, as opposed to myself. He doesn't consider himself to have any connection to this. Any connection to Yetzias Mitzrayim. It has no relevance to his life. However, the Tom, the She'eni Yedei Alisho, that's a different character. That's maybe the people that we think, until we heard this Beis Halevi, are the Rosha. The Tom is the simpleton. He asks simple questions. Why? Why all this? And we go and we explain it to him on his level. The She'eni Yedei Alisho is not a child. The She'eni Yedei Alisho is someone who can't ask the questions himself. He's disinterested. He has no interest. He's not motivated. He's not passionate yet about Yetzias Mitzrayim. At Psachloi. Beloshen Akeva. With warmth. Tabisal Vankite. With some warmth. At Psachloi. You can start him. You can start his interest. You can pique his interest. You can ask him the questions. Bring him into it. So it's the Chocham, the Tom, and the She'eni Yedei Alisho who we connect with. When Rabbi Aaron Kotler, during the difficult war years, was in America raising funds for the Vaad Hatzalah, they had $50,000, which was an astronomical sum at the time, to be sent to their brothers who were over the Atlantic, still in Europe, and the American government wouldn't give permission for it to be released. It was enemy country. So Rabbi Aaron went with Irving Bunim, the great Aguda Askin, and he went with him to visit, I'm not sure how you read his name, Morgenthau or Morgenthau, if anyone can help me, so I can read it either way I want. So they went into this government official, Henry Morgenthau. And Rabbi Aaron was a fiery man. And he stands there with Irving Bunim. He doesn't speak English. And in Yiddish, he tells Henry, he says, Zoge. He says, tell Henry, tells Irving Bunim, tell him, as is gonish wird, und sein Stelle ist gonish wird, if he doesn't let this money be released. Tell him that he's worth nothing. His position in the American government is worth nothing if he doesn't release this money. Irving Bunim is more of a diplomat, so he changes it slightly in his translation to mean that the rabbi is saying that if you don't release the money, it's very difficult for your nation of Israel, and it will have tremendous repercussions for our brothers on the other side of the waters. And Henry calmed down. He thought the rabbi was talking more sharply, but Aaron noticed this. He said, "Nay, Zogen Gnuivas Chav Gezok. Tell me exactly what I just said. Translate my words." Irving Bunim listens to Rabbonim and he says to him in English, he says that your government position is worthless and you are worthless as a Jew if you do not release this money. And Aaron's waiting for the response, and Henry, he stands up and he says, "As a Yid, even if it means losing my position, this could get me into big trouble. I may have no future in this country, but I will release the money to my brothers." Aaron managed to fire up that spark which was in this otherwise cold Yid. We sit at the Seder, so there's the Chocham, the Rosha, the She'in Yedir, and Lishon on the Tom. The Rosha is a very specific individual. It's an individual who knows and is Miskavin Limroid boy. He knows about the Rebbeinu Shem, he knows everything, he's learnt, he may know Shas, but he doesn't believe it's relevant. The quintessential apikoros of times gone by, almost non-relevant today. The Tom She'ini De'alishal, the others, some that need a bit more help, others that need a little bit more bringing forward the Apsachloi with some warmth. Some are asking, some aren't asking questions. But that's the Seder. And this Seder, when done with Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, as stories telling the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, down to Tzvadei Akinim, has everlasting effects, down to Gidon, down to Gregory, and for ourselves, for our children, when we relive the experience of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So I'm attacking Zoy Chazai.